Welcome into You're the Cure right here on AM 580. Dr. Ben Edwards, MD with Veritas Medical. Always check out the website, veritasmedical.com. For archived programs, we have it there, veritasmedical.com. Also here on the show, health coach Melody Wilkes, special guest via phone line today, Morley Robbins. I always want to say Marty Robbins. I know I say that every time, but it's not Marty Robbins. It's Morley. And so welcome, doctor. Good to see you back.
Good morning,
Dr. Edwards.
Good to be here.
And Melody
Good
Wilkes.
Good morning.
Good to see all of y'all. And Morley on the phone.
Q&A day today.
Yes. Good morning, Morley. How are you?
Doing great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing wonderful. Doing wonderful. So I have to ask you this question. Oh, can I jump in real quick?
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not even going to do an intro because then we'll get off on a tangent.
Oh, I see.
Like we always do. And it'll be 30 minutes down the road and we won't get to the Q&A.
All right.
No. Okay, no, I'll keep my mouth shut. Go ahead.
No, that's fair enough. By the way, phone lines will be open. If you guys want to call in or text a question to Morley, feel free to do so. 806-745-5800. Okay, this sounds kind of strange, but I was reading an article last week about some of these people that are really thinking that this is the cat's meow. It sounds odd, but coffee enemas. Have you ever heard of this stuff before? I mean, I know there's all kinds of things that are floated out there saying, oh, this is the latest, greatest thing. It's going to grow hair on a cue ball and all. But I thought, coffee enemas of all things?
Yeah.
Well, Wait a minute, doctor. Do you guys believe this stuff, or do you think it's good?
Not only do we believe it, the Merck Manual, which is the Bible for medical doctors. I'm talking conventional, traditional medical doctors, straight out of. I mean, you go to any medical school, and the Merck Manual is the manual that you go by. Coffee enemas were in the Merck Manual up until sometime in the 1970s. It was a standard treatment that was not only supported by experience, but also the research showing what it does. There's some chemical in coffee that interacts with the nerves in the rectum, and those nerves go straight to the liver. And
that's what I understand.
Causes
the liver cleanse.
The liver to increase its detoxification enzymes and efforts.
So you think it's good?
Oh, yeah. It'll definitely help folks that are toxic, clear toxins. There's no doubt. Where it was really made famous was probably Dr. Gerson, Max Gerson, 1940s in Germany. I think it was his wife, actually, had bad migraine headaches. Nobody could help her. He was a medical doctor, and he started experimenting with various nutritional things and kind of landed on this juice, a fresh squeeze, carrot and apple, and I forget the exact recipe, but it's some fresh juice, and then the coffee enemas, and there may have been one or two other parts of the protocol, but bottom line, it was mainly juice and enemas, and the migraines went away. And so word spread around town over there in Germany that Dr. Gerson had this cure for migraine. So other migraine sufferers came by, and he gave them the recipe, and it helped that. But then it started helping other issues besides migraines that these patients had, like eczema or whatever. And then it helped somebody's tuberculosis get better. And then it helped someone's, apparently, cancer get better. But so it was a lot there, and he ended up modifying and tweaking that protocol. He moved to America during World War II. He was getting persecuted, so he moved to New York. And his practice at that time was really focused on cancer therapy with nutrition. And he had a number of cases. I think 50 cases is what he published in his book. And he presented 10 of those cases to the United States Congress, the Subcommittee on Foreign Affairs, I believe, in July of 42. Don't quote me on that. It's in his book, though. It's on the cover of his book. And so that was a big part of his protocol.
And I know coffee enema.
Yeah, because when a tumor cell's dying, it releases lots of toxins, and you can actually get overwhelmed from that toxicity. Even conventional oncologists understand there's a tumor lysis syndrome.
Because is it the chemo that you're putting in your body toxic anyway? It's basically that's what it is, a poison,
well,
isn't it?
Yeah, chemos are poisons. The original chemo was mustard, a derivative mustard gas. But all chemos are chemical poison to kill living
cancer
cells. And yeah, the rapidly dividing cells in particular are susceptible, but so are your regular cells. But he tumor lysis syndrome, that's when a tumor's breaking down aggressively. Oncologists understand this. Patients can get sick and even die from tumor lysis syndrome. So that's what Dr. Gerson, I think, was going for, was when these tumor cells start to break down, and so all those toxins they release, you got to get them out of you or you feel really bad.
If you want to do this at home, though, you need to use organic, yes. I would assume.
Yep.
Coffee.
Coffee berries, they're actually berries, not beans, will soak up toxins more aggressively than most fruit and berries and vegetables or plants. They really, really are sponges for toxins.
And the only way it works is through an enema. You can't drink it?
Correct. That's right. Yeah.
Wow.
So
that's wild.
The toxins really get soaked up by these coffee beans or berries. And so you want to get organic. You don't want to be putting toxins into you when you're trying to
so
detox.
So you just brew it like you brew a regular cup
I've
of coffee?
I've never done one, although some of my employees have. I'll have to get them on to give their testimony.
I think we should try it with Wade first.
I'm all down.
The Gerson Clinic is still alive and well. He got asked to leave New York, and that's a whole other story. But his granddaughter, Charlotte, who's like 96 years old, I think, is in Tijuana, Mexico, still running the Gerson Clinic. They have tens of thousands of patients over the years. And so they've got a website, and I'm pretty sure on their website is the recipe and the instructions on how to do coffee enemas. And again, Merck Manual, the standard of care medical textbook, basically encyclopedia of how to practice medicine. It was a standard therapy in the Merck Manual for ages.
So Morley, you buying any of this, or what do you think?
Well, let me give you slightly a different view.
Okay.
Let me guess. Iron toxicity, retinol deficiency.
Yeah, right. Now, come on now. No, it's a very popular intervention for people who think they are, quote, copper toxic. And so this coffee enema supposedly gets rid of excess unbound copper. Well, let's think about that. What we're learning on these conversations is how outstandingly important copper is to our metabolism and to our ability to detox the oxidants. And so what I think is a better strategy is to lasso the copper and get it back into function with the ceruloplasmin protein. There's no question. I did not know that it was in the Merck Manual. That's a fantastic breakthrough understanding. And it certainly makes sense given Dr. Gerson's success that he might be relying on that. I think it's more complicated in the current environment. And what we also have to understand is that the originator, Dr. Gerson, was a carnivore. His daughter, who further popularized the detox programs, was a vegan. And so she's completely altered his focus and physiology because of her food preferences. So I think the what worked in the originator Gerson has been altered in the offspring Gerson, and I think there's a lot of confusion because of that. So I've never done one. I've never recommended one. As I tell my clients, I prefer to drink coffee than shoot it up my butt. I just won't do it. And I think it has a stimulatory effect that I'm not sure is healthy. So the fact that it was in the Merck Manual isn't exactly a good housekeeping seal of approval. It just indicates that it was used for a much longer time than I realized. So I appreciate that understanding.
Yep. And I want to focus in on what Morley went to, copper toxicity. Because you'll read about this. In fact, Dale Bredesen's book on Alzheimer's, he really talks about copper toxicity as part of the common denominator in a lot of his Alzheimer's patients. And so what Morley was saying there is unbound copper. Remember, copper's got to be bound to ceruloplasmin. That's that, I call it a transport protein, but enzyme that allows copper to be used by the body. So we call it bioavailable copper. That's why we tell you don't just go get copper from the health food store in a bottle. Get it in a whole food source like beef, liver, and whole food vitamin C, because copper has to be in a bioavailable form. It has to be connected with ceruloplasmin. Remember, we talked about retinol being the bellhop who opens the door for the taxi cab for copper to jump into the taxi cab. The taxi cab is ceruloplasm. Retinol or vitamin A is what's opening the door, loading the copper into the ceruloplasm. So you've got to have the copper bound properly. It's got to be bioavailable and bound properly. And that's what Dr. Bredesen, in his book on Alzheimer's, The End of Alzheimer's, seems to be not addressing or missing there. And that's what Morley's getting at. If someone thinks they're copper toxic, then they may be taught or told to do a coffee enema to try to get rid of that. But what Morley's saying is, no, we just need to get it bound up properly with ceruloplasm.
All right, let's go to the phones real quick. Good morning. Welcome into the show.
Good morning.
Morning.
I know that coffee, small little bit of warm coffee will drain the tube feeding tube of a person without harming them also.
So someone being fed orally through a feeding tube is what you're saying?
Yes.
Yep. To clear that tube.
Coffee
it will.
Wow. Yeah.
And it doesn't harm the person.
Yep. A little bit of coffee in moderation is actually beneficial, especially if it's the right kind of coffee.
Yeah, make sure it's organic.
Yep, as I mentioned earlier.
I don't know if Jim's Cowboy Coffee would fit the bill or not, but
Jim's Cowboy Coffee will work too. Because I've had to do that from medical people, especially at midnight hour. And you can't call somebody, you can call a specialist, and they'll say, try a little bit of warm coffee.
Awesome.
Good to know.
Thank you for that call. Very nice. Glad to. I tell you what, though, I mean, I like coffee. I try to drink about one cup a day. I know there's a lot of health benefits to it with the right coffee. I get all that. But I just had to ask the experts today on the program about this coffee enema deal, because, I mean, it just sounds so outrageous to me.
Well, it's one of those.
I'm kind of like Morley here.
It's one of those integrative treatments. In the integrative medicine world, there's, you know, hundreds or thousands or more of different kind of modalities that are utilized to try to help symptoms, basically. So I call it the green version of conventional medicine. Conventional medicine is pharmaceuticals and surgery, basically, are the options for any medical problem. And in the integrative world, you've got acupuncture and herbs and supplements and all kinds of stuff, including coffee enemas. And then there's what we try to talk about on this program. Your body's got the cure. You don't need to just treat a symptom. Your body knows how to detox toxins. But the body has to be fully supported, and it's mostly its enzyme systems. These enzymes are what does all the work for us that allows our body to function normally. Just like the inner workings of your car, you've got to have all the different parts and pieces and fuel levels and everything, you know, that the guy that built the car, everything intended to be in there, it's got to be in there. And other stuff doesn't need to be in there. So it's the same with the body, and that's what Morley really gets at with his root cause protocol. And what we try to get at Veritas is give the body the key minerals, the key nutrients that it needs so the enzymes can work right, so the body will just fix itself. You don't have to do symptom management with conventional or integrative therapies. So we can avoid the coffee enemas and avoid a lot of other things too if you just get to the very root of the matter.
So if I hear you correct, doctor, you're saying basically the coffee enema is not one to be done just for, I don't know, a maintenance dose or something. I mean, it's you're really going after a specific issue, such as maybe you have cancer or something. But like for me, who just otherwise healthy, yeah, I need to lose a little weight, but not on any kind of medications, that kind of thing. Actually, doing the Morley protocol, my wife has got me on that, and I take it every day. But other than that, I don't need to take a coffee enema just for health reasons.
In my opinion, no.
Okay.
I'll always look to the original design. How did God design our body to detoxify itself? Well, number one, you don't want to purposely be toxifying it. Mm-hmm. So avoid these things in your diet and lifestyle as best you can. And some of those are unavoidable, especially where we live in West Texas with Roundup everywhere. But so then you got to support the way God designed us to detox. And part of that is good hydration, good nourishment, movement, exercise, you know, being in the sunshine, sweating. Sweating's a great detoxifier, but you've got to have all the enzymes there functioning, ready to push the toxins out. And that's where Morley and the minerals and root cause come in so well, is it really supports the minerals.
I think that's a good thing. And I'm glad to know, because I see some of these things online or read something somewhere or hear about it, and I go and do a little bit of research on it, and it's not saying it's not legit, but I get only the chuckle about what Morley said. I just can't, you know, put coffee up your butt.
Yeah, I admit it. I'm the one that brought him the article.
Oh,
and he laughed.
He's finally copping to it.
He laughed so hard, I thought his head was going to...
I about fell out of my chair.
He
right?
goes, I'm going to have a stroke. I can't stop laughing.
And it was really bad.
This is a real deal. What if, though, like, and I know that not being able to lose weight is just another symptom, but could this help detoxify so you could lose weight?
You can detoxify through intermittent fasting.
There's pros and cons to everything, and there's something to be said for treating a symptom while you're working on the root causes. I mean, I live in the real world, and patients come in suffering enormously. I mean, we did have one patient a couple years ago that was doing coffee enemas before we ever saw her. She walked in our door the first day and told me she has to do one every single day or her brain doesn't work. Literally, she can't remember phone numbers. She can't remember people's names. She can't get out of bed. I mean, she just can't function. And the coffee enemas allowed her to function some. So, I mean, I'm not going to tell her to stop probably because it's treating that symptom and she needs it on the day-to-day thing. But we're definitely not just going to tell her, yeah, keep doing that. It's working for you, kind of. No, we're going to get to the very root cause, or try to at least. So there's a balance there between treat a symptom and get to the root cause. And unfortunately, Americans are so used to treating symptoms, and if a doctor tells you anything to treat a symptom, you'll just latch onto that. And if you feel a little better, I mean, a steroid shot will make you feel better. Can't do that every day, though. So if you latch onto some of these things and you just feel a little better, you may not be motivated to get to the root cause. And that's where the rub's really at. You know, patients want doctors to make them feel better, but then they lose their motivation to get their body in order.
Question for Morley on the text line. Morley, this person asked on the text line, I've slowly started the protocol and I did a foot bath with mag salts, borax, and baking soda for about 45 minutes. 2 days later, I had a major anxiety attack. It was scary. Several months later, I tried again with Epsom salts for 15 minutes, and 2 days later, it happened again. Just wondering what could be causing this reaction.
Wow, there's a concept in the body called neurological switching and neurological blocking. And this is something that my wife, Dr. Liz, and I learned when we were going through some training with Freddie Ulan, who's a nutritionally oriented chiropractor who has a training program out of Florida. And about 30 to 40% of people can react to heavy metals, can react to food sensitivities, can react to, they might have infections. There are actually a handful of factors that can be in play. But what happens is a mineral that's supposed to calm you down like magnesium does just the opposite. Now, it doesn't happen very often, but it sounds like in this situation, this particular individual may have some neurological issues. And what I've pieced together is that all of these factors that will trigger that reaction have a very close relationship to this copper iron dysregulation. Part of the challenge is there's a social meme and understanding that, oh, I'm copper toxic or I'm zinc deficient, and what's completely hidden from the public is the fact that excess unbound iron is causing both of those conditions. And what we have to do is kind of step back and really take stock of two important facts. One is that for every atom of copper, there's 60 atoms of iron. So that when someone says they're copper toxic, well, then they are so iron toxic, it's frightening. And when someone says that they are zinc deficient, what we need to understand is that when zinc shows low in a blood test, what you have to understand is that zinc and iron share an absorption pathway. It's called the DMT1, dimetal transporter 1 pathway, that allows those metals to come into the body through the intestine. Well, iron is like your older brother who's a bully. Iron will always be absorbed first at the expense of zinc. And so the body can get very unbalanced, very out of balance, because of this iron dynamic, but it's represented as a copper issue or a zinc issue. And it sounds like this individual who had the very negative reaction, and I'm really sorry it happened. I think this is maybe the second time I've ever heard of that specific reaction to magnesium causing anxiety. But what I would encourage them to do is to delve deeper into their mineral status and find out what's really going on across the board with their minerals, and more specifically, what are the dynamics between copper and zinc and iron and magnesium that's laid out in the blood test that's available. It's called the Full Monty Iron Panel. Because I think that there's more to the story, and really regret that it happened, but I'm thrilled that you had a chance to ask the question, because I think it may shed light on a lot of people who might have some kind of adverse reaction. But it's a very unusual reaction, but it does happen, particularly in folks who are struggling with the copper-iron dynamic.
And depending on what else she may or may not have been taking, I don't know if she could text back in, but if she was taking any oral magnesium, we've had some patients who just really load up on the mag, foot baths, oral, they try to eat foods with mag, and they're so focused on mag, and which is fine, except if you have some of these other ones way out of balance, it can trigger some stuff that is undesirable, so you kind of have to go slow, and she may have been going slow with just a foot bath, but... Well, that's just one word of caution.
Well, I've said before many times on this show that I take the Calm, okay, the Calm magnesium, and yeah, you know, I take that and I kind of jazz me up a little bit on some of that stuff. And so, you know, I'm kind of prone to anxiety as well. You know, I don't know if it's left over from maybe my time in combat in Iraq, perhaps. But if I take too much of that stuff, it can really get me going, too. So I learned to back off of that. But that's a different kind of magnesium, I understand.
Well, yeah, which I'd like to get into, if we could, the different forms of magnesium. Citrate, the malate, the glycinate, and what each one does.
Well, there are about 25 different forms of magnesium.
That's unbelievable.
And again... I think we have to step back and say there are four, I guess, broader classifications. So we have magnesium that exists in water, certainly seawater, but just many waters will have magnesium, and that's an ionic form of magnesium, which is immediately usable by the body. When it's in an ionic state, it means the body knows exactly what to do with it and can make it part of the transactions that need to take place. But the second form of magnesium in a broad classification would be magnesium that's found in food. So we have a lot of different sources of food. The leafy greens, obviously, they're green for a reason because they have a lot of chlorophyll. But there's a lot of magnesium in those foods. Believe it or not, licorice root is one of the richest sources of magnesium on the planet, as opposed to licorice candy, which is not a good source of magnesium. Pumpkin seeds, another rich source. There are a variety of foods that are very rich.
How about spinach? I eat spinach all the time.
Well, the thing with spinach you have to be careful of is they've hybridized it.
Yeah.
And it used to have more magnesium than calcium back in the day. Back in the 40s and 50s, and today it has more calcium than magnesium.
Oh, I didn't
know
that.
You have to understand that there's been this overwhelming shift in function of some of these plants just because of the obsession that there seems to be around the need for calcium and the need for vitamin D and so on and so forth. So you have to be really careful about your sources. And again, what I've come to do, Wade, is if everyone is going left, then I'm very likely going to go right. If everyone's eating spinach, they're obsessed with spinach, well, it would be a good rule of thumb to say, maybe I should rethink that. Where everyone's taking avocado, where the world is just lost in avocado, thinking that that's a good source of fat, when in fact it's not. I think it's a very troubling source of fat, but that's not for this discussion right now. So we've got the food sources. Then we have the transdermal, and the two most prevalent are the Epsom salts that many people know about, the magnesium sulfate. It was first identified for use back in the late 1500s in England. There's actually a river, Epsom, and there's a lot of magnesium sulfate in that river. And farmers discovered that their animals like to drink from that water, and they seem to have a better milk production. That's really where it originated many hundreds of years ago. And then there's magnesium chloride oil, which is basically a dehydrated form of sea salt. It says oil, but it's a filmy substance, but it has properties that can be easily absorbed by the skin. Then we get to all of the chelated forms, and that's where we get into this Byzantine world of all these different chelates, which is chelation is a derivative of a Greek word that means claw, and so there's a claw from an amino acid that's holding on to magnesium. Well, the two forms of magnesium chelate that I've had the best success with, and I think Dr. Ben has as well, magnesium glycinate and magnesium malate. The studies that have been done show that they have an absorption rate of about 70 to 80%, which is about as high as you're going to get. And so the malate is especially effective for muscle issues. Glycinate just seems to be an across-the-board beneficial form, but you have to be careful. People who've had exposure to benzodiazepines,
like Xanax,
may have a reaction to that glycine molecule. So you have to be really sensitive to that. Not everyone. The funny thing about the benzos is 60% seem to have no issue, 40% a very severe issue, and I don't fully understand why, but it's a very well-known fact that there isn't a uniform reaction to the
Going back to the lady that texted in about the anxiety or panic attacks, if she was taking a benzo, say like a Klonopin or Xanax or something along, or diazepam, which is Valium, and she's taking this glycinate, it could enhance it and make it worse. Is that what you're saying?
It's possible, but it's usually the magnesium glycinate
that will
trigger that. But then you've got another form is magnesium taurate, and it's a very popular form for heart issues. The taurine molecule has particular affinity for the heart muscle. There's another form that was developed by Hans Nieper in Germany. It's called magnesium orotate, very, very popular in Europe, and it's particularly effective for neural issues, particularly multiple sclerosis. That's really what he formulated for, was people who had MS. But it's just another chelated form. And then you begin to get into like magnesium gluconate, and that's bound to a glucose molecule. And again, they just have different properties. But what I tend to do is focus on what's going to deliver the most magnesium under the best conditions, and it tends to be this glycinate and malate. At least that's been my experience.
Okay, one other question, and I'll let other people jump in here because I'm curious about this. So if I hear you correctly, and I'm a big salad eater, and I love to eat salad bar top salads, okay, at the grocery store and, you know, other places around town that have good, you know, salad bars, are you telling me I should stay away from the spinach and start eating romaine lettuce, maybe, as my salad is concerned, and stay away from spinach, or what's your thoughts?
I think the rule of thumb is variety is the spice of life. And I think what happens, we're all guilty of it, we get into ruts. And we especially get into ruts around our eating. And I think that I've got clients who will have a spinach smoothie every day. And I'm like, really? Is that, we have lost sight of what did our ancestors do? What was the smorgasbord that fed them? And I'm not suggesting that they had this wide variety of food, but I don't think they got stuck in in ruts like we do today. And so I think it would be advantageous to have a little bit of variety in your greens and have a little variety in the condiments and the other vittles that you're putting in your salads, just to give your body some diversity.
Yeah.
Get exposure to different enzymes and bacteria, if for no other reason, to have a greater population in our gut. And I think, I don't know what the numbers are, maybe Dr. Ben, you can be more specific, but I think there's been a dramatic narrowing of the diversity of the gut bacteria over the last 50 years.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that in part is what's contributing to many of the conditions that people have, is we've lost the gut diversity for a variety of reasons. The farming practices have changed, but I think our eating practices have changed. And we're much more likely to get into a very specific pattern and never question that.
Yeah. I encourage a lot of my patients, or try to, every patient I see, to pick something different at the grocery store in the produce aisle. We all get stuck on just going to our usual three or four different vegetables, and I'll tell them to walk by something that you have no idea what it is.
And, monk fruit.
And pick it out and take it home and Google how to prepare it, or if you're a Veritas member, call our Veritas navigators and they'll help you prepare it. But yeah, diversity, lack of diversity is a huge problem. And the gut flora, studies show that when they look at native tribes like the Maasai African tribe or South American Amazon rainforest Indian tribes, and they study their stool, there's 30,000 different types of bacteria in these native tribes that are eating native diets. Your average American, depending on what studies you're looking at, might have a few hundred species, like 400, 500. If you're a pretty sick American, if you're not that sick, you may have 1,000 or up to 5,000 species of bacteria. So we've totally lost diversity. So getting a diverse flora is dependent upon diverse food. So I highly recommend that. One more comment before we got to go to break. Magnesium threonate is a type that we've had a lot of great success, in particular with folks with anxiety or insomnia.
Mm-hmm.
We'll
three
put them on
eight?
Magnesium threonate, threonate, I think. But it seems to have a dramatic effect on anxiety and sleep. So I definitely recommend that.
Magnesium threonate.
Threonate for anxiety and sleep. All right.
Okay, we'll take a quick break. We'll come right back. Stick around. You're the Cure. You're listening to it right here on AM 580. Welcome back into You're the Cure right here on AM 580. Of course, Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Of course, check us out, veritasmedical.com. You can check out all the programs there that are archived, veritasmedical.com. Special guest on the phone with us today, of course, Morley Robbins, and we're going back into the show. Of course, taking more of your questions, we'll certainly do that, 806-745-5800. You can call or text 806-745-5800 along the way. Okay, gentlemen and ladies, where would y'all like to go next?
I've been asked multiple times. I know what Morley's going to say, but maybe we can get into some of the why behind his answer. But what's the best form of cod liver oil?
Oh, yeah.
And why? So, Morley, what's your thoughts on cod liver oil, which, again, retinol is the animal-based form of vitamin A. There's the carotenoids in plants, like beta-carotene. There's the retinoids in the animal-based vitamin A, like retinol. So that's why we recommend cod liver oil. It's a great source of retinol, vitamin A. But what brand or what form, Morley, do you like?
Yeah, no, I think it's important for people to realize that there are differences. And a couple years ago, maybe it was almost 4 years ago, I just figured that one cod liver oil was the same as another. And then I got schooled up by Dan Corrigan. He has a company called Corganic. And he sent me a lot of literature, and I was stunned by the variation that exists in the fish oil industry. And it's a whole other discussion just to talk about that. But one of the bedrock sources of information for what's good for us comes from Weston A. Price. And he and his wife traveled the globe back in the 1920s looking for indigenous communities that had perfect teeth. Because they do it, if you had perfect teeth, you had perfect health. And one of the things that he zeroed in on was the importance of these animal fats, particularly retinol. And there's been a lot of confusion over the years about, you know, what Dr. Price learned and what are the best sources. And so the development of condom oil really flourished in Scandinavia around the time that Dr. Price was doing his research. And there is no evidence in Dr. Price's notes, and there's no evidence in the historical traditions of the Scandinavians that they fermented these products. And again, there's a lot of controversy around that. The form that I found to be particularly effective and clean, and it's a family-run business in Norway, is called Rosita's Extra Virgin Condom Oil, and it has the original balance of 10 parts retinol to 1 part vitamin D. And that's really how Mother Nature intended it. And it seems to deliver a very effective form of the nutrient that's been missing in our diet for 60-plus years. There are a lot of companies that sell this product. There are a lot of brands of condom oil. Many of them have Scandinavian-sounding names. And I would just caution people that if, you know, what we're really understanding is that very much like when we buy a car, we're very interested in the engineering of the car, and there's a big difference between a Yugo and a BMW. And I think we have to be really sensitive to that condition as it relates to the supplements that we're using, and especially a supplement that's as important as condom oil. You really want to be very focused on the engineering of it, how it's been processed, that there's been no heat involved in its manufacturing. And again, a lot of these nuances are not clearly represented in the bottle. Even if you go to the website, there's a lot of information that's behind a curtain. So you have to be really careful about what you're buying. And again, it's very tempting to say, well, gosh, this other bottle is much cheaper. Well, there's a reason why it's cheaper. I think when we're in a situation where there's a lot of metabolic imbalance in society today, we've openly discussed the fact that there's this dynamic between copper and iron, but now we're really beginning to realize how important retinol is in regulating that process and in helping to have optimal expression at a nuclear level with the DNA, then we have to be really mindful of getting the best sources of retinol that we can. And that's really why I really encourage people to seek out the Rosita's. It's not inexpensive, but it's an investment. And the people that are making that investment are finding that they are surprised at how different they feel and how much better they feel once that nutrient starts to take a bigger and bigger role in their body.
Yeah, and just one thing about price on supplements, kind of what I counsel my patients on is set a budget, whatever your budget can be. And most Americans are not accustomed to spending a little more of their budget on quality food and or supplementation, quality supplementation to the deficient food. If you're not going to eat your beef liver, then you gotta supplement or be deficient. So there takes a little bit of a mind shift to get you to understand you probably do need a lot more of your budget to quality food and supplementation. You need to go with a cheaper iPhone or not even get the newest one maybe. You know, God forbid we have to say no to some technology. But there's a mind shift that's got to change. But then number two, so once you set your budget, like if it's $100 a month, get the top quality stuff. I'd rather have just three of the top quality things instead of go get 10 of the mediocre things, because I could find a cod liver that was 50% less than Rosita, and that'll save me enough money where I can go buy 10 other things. No, I'd rather you do three really high quality products and get the bang for the buck. Second thing is, every supplement you look at, I think about food. Where does it naturally come in the food? And if I can't get it through the food, then what is the next closest thing? So if someone's going to go harvest some cod out of the ocean, you know, if they could bring it to me straight off the boat, right onto the platter, you know, my plate, and I'd eat it fresh right then, great. But if I can't, what's the best way to extract the nutrients, preserve it, put it in a bottle, and let me consume it? So that's the whole processing part that Morley's talking about. And you want that to be as simple and clean and effective, and where that those nutrients don't degrade, they're not exposed to heat and oxygen or chemicals. And so many of these fish oil products are. They are exposed to lots of different things along the way, to the point that they're just pieces and parts that are adulterated. And usually it's manipulated in some manner to get the ratios of DHA and EPA to a certain level that people, you know, are looking for, as opposed to just keeping it as simple as possible, just straight out of the cod liver into a bottle, basically. So Rosita does that. I think we were talking off air. We can go to this one, really a question for the air, but in general, it was about hormones and bioidentical hormones. And Morley, you piped in about the importance of retinol. So let me real quick say my spiel on hormones. Obviously, God made us with hormones, testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, vitamin D, insulin, thyroid, adrenal hormones. There's a gazillion hormones. And hormones are the messengers, the communicators. They click into the hormone receptors, and and when that connection is made on the cell membrane, then a signal is sent to the DNA to do something. So everyone's always concerned about their hormones. First thing I tell them is, well, don't forget the hormone receptor, because these receptors, it's just like a key into a keyhole. You can have the key to the front door, but if the keyhole's not there, if for some reason the doorknob's messed up, covered up, been out of shape, or just absent, then it doesn't matter. You've got the hormone or the key, but no keyhole to put it in. So you can't forget about the keyholes. The receptors for these hormones are affected by toxins, inflammation, oxidative stress, the cell membrane that's made of fat, and that's what these receptors sit in. That cell membrane can be oxidized and inflamed. That will cause these receptors to get bent out of shape. So the diet and lifestyle things that we preach so hardcore on this show and at the clinic are designed to bring oxidative stress down, to clean up your keyholes so your own hormones will work better. So that's always been my spiel, but now there's a third piece of the puzzle, not just the key and keyhole, but the enzymes that get the whole thing working, and that's where the retinol kicks in. So Morley, I'll let you comment on the retinol aspect of this whole hormone picture and the questions that patients have about hormones.
Yeah, it's just been in the last few months that we've really been digging much deeper about what is retinol, what is it doing, and I've got a stack now of about 2 inches of research studies, each one devoted to a different aspect of what retinol does to help facilitate the function of the body. And one of them that really surprised me, but it makes perfect sense when you think about the hormones are very dependent on cholesterol. You know, cholesterol is found in fatty foods, but what's hanging out with the cholesterol is retinol. And it turns out that retinol and the retinoic acids that are a derivative of it play a very pivotal role in helping to regulate the hormone balance. There's a class of enzymes. They're called cytochrome P as in Peter, cytochrome P450 enzymes, and they are very much dependent on copper, bioavailable copper, and retinol to do their function. Well, they're the very enzymes that Dr. Ben is talking about to help manage the production of these enzymes. And I think the point that was just made about the receptors is immensely important. And these enzymes and the receptors can get rusty. And what is a medium to create rust? It's called a retinol deficient body. And so, again, we're operating in a society now that's been deficient in retinol for at least 2 generations. And it's become so much a part of our daily thinking that we don't even take stock of the fact that we don't really eat eggs all that often. We don't really eat grass-fed butter or the cod liver oil that we were just talking about or the beef liver or the heavy cream. And we're just not thinking about those nutrient-rich sources of retinol that our ancestors relied upon and had, I think, very robust health. But we have this perception that we're healthier than they were because we see pictures of them when they were older. Well, they must not be healthy if their looks alone. And the image that I have is when I was born, my grandfather was 72 years old the day I was born. And I well remember helping him weed a key piece of his property that was a very steep sloping hill that had pachysandra in it. And I'm 20 years old. He's 92 years old, and he was outworking me. And so I had to really rethink what was vitality back in the late 1800s. He was born in 1879. So I think we've lost sight of the rich legacy of food. And Wade, when you were gone, your replacement, I'm embarrassed, I can't think of his name.
Jim Stewart.
And he's 77.
Yeah.
He was talking. At one point, he said, you know, ladies and gentlemen, I'm just realizing that I don't think my mom and my dad ever had a sick day in their life. And he was reflecting on these foods that they grew up with that we're talking about. And so, again, it's just recognizing the importance of retinol that is, it's essential in a diet. And what I've come to distinguish is the difference between fat and oil. They're both three-letter words.
Right.
Well, what I've come to do is I've translated the word fat means from animal tissue. That's what fat is. And oil is coming from a plant. And the animal tissue has the letter A in it. And that's where the retinol comes from. So people need to be rethinking their affinity for these sources of animal tissue that provide the retinol. We've been conditioned to think that an avocado, coconut oil, and olive oil are supplying all of our lipid requirements, and lipids just another way of saying fat, but they're not. You know, the fact that avocado starts with the letter A, that doesn't mean it has retinol in it, and it doesn't. And so we have to really step back from some of the habits of daily living and rethink the difference between fat and oil, and we need more fat in our diet.
I got a couple of texts here, Morley, for you. One, well, actually, this was for Dr. Ben. It says, Dr. Ben, you mentioned iodine during last week's show. Does Morley have anything further about iodine as it relates to the root cause protocol and why? That's one. And then another one that says, is Rosita available locally? So those two questions right quick.
Rosita is available at our clinic. I'm not sure otherwise locally, but a lot of times Natural Health Market will carry what we carry, so she could check there. Otherwise online.
Natural Health Market, ASIC and Quaker. Okay.
And then Morley, I'll let you take the iodine question.
So what's very important in the body is to be able to turn ferrous iron into ferric iron. Ferrous is unbound. Ferric is bound. And it's the ferrous form that is so reactive in the body. Mother Nature's preference is to use the enzyme ferrooxidase to do that function. And you take four atoms of ferrous iron, mix it with some hydrogen and the ferrooxidase enzyme. And what you're going to get on the back end is four atoms of ferric iron and two molecules of water. Pretty cool. So you're going to hydrate as a result of that. Turns out that iodine has similar properties in that it will help to oxidize the ferrous form of iron, and it will turn it into four atoms of ferric iron, but there's no water given off. And so you'll see a lot. I mean, in no way am I suggesting that iodine isn't important, because we know it is, particularly important in thyroid function. But what we have to appreciate is that there's a enzymatic supremacy in the body that keys off of ferrooxidase, and as we put more focus there, we're going to be less dependent on the iodine to do that function. Iodine is very popular in breast cancer treatment. Why? Because what we know is that there's five times more iron in breast cancer cells than the healthy cells next to it. Well, that toxic iron is ferrous. And what the iodine is doing is help to convert it. It's metabolically useful and productive, but it's not solving the underlying physiology, which is lack of ferrooxidase enzyme function. And so we just have to be mindful that iodine is important, but I would say that ferrooxidase is maybe 1,000 times more important, but yet there's no press around that. There's no discussion of the ferrooxidase enzyme. Why? Because it does too much. It really helps to change the physiology and the detox capacity of the body, which we started our conversation with when the program began.
Okay, so follow-up text to that says, hormones, thyroid, really want to get off prescriptions, please advise. Suppose iron and ceruloplasmin must be optimal first, yes, question mark?
In a nutshell, yes. You've got to have normal function of ceruloplasm, which is, again, that's the kind of the transport vehicle for copper to be in to be utilized properly, and you've got to have that in working order. And too much iron in the body is going to drive oxidative stress and block a lot of your enzymes from working. So, yes, you got to get those things in order.
Okay. Got a couple of minutes left. What else, folks, would we like to talk about before we get away today? Of course, visiting with Dr. Ben Edwards of Morley Robbins, Melody Wilkes Health Coach here on the show. Anything else you'd like to say?
I just want to remind, if there's new listeners, that this iron that we keep talking about so bad, the iron was added to our food from the 1940s and on when they thought we were all iron deficient. Turns out the iron gets stuck in our tissue where it drives oxidative stress, and it may be low in the blood, but it's high in the tissue. So it's been in your food. You didn't know it. It's fortified food. So Cheerios and bread and bagels and cookies and crackers and everything. People have been eating macaroni and cheese.
I love it.
You've got fortified iron. So the chances of you being iron deficient are pretty close to nil. even if the blood work says that you are, you've got to consider what's in your tissue, and it gets stuck in the tissue because the enzymes to move it out of your tissue aren't working.
Right.
Because you don't have retinol, you don't have the bioavailable copper, you don't have the magnesium. So that's the problem with iron. It's been in the diet, now it's in all of us. And donating blood is the way to get it out. Or if you're bleeding, and we've had a couple patients who were truly deficient, but they had a history of significant and ongoing chronic bleeding, lots of bleeding. So they were low in iron, and they're also low in copper, though. But it's very rare that someone's bled that much. So the way to get it out, stop eating it, and then donate some blood, and then get your magnesium and copper up and your retinol up through food-based sources. So in a nutshell, that's it. So that's the deal on iron. We didn't really get into that today, but go listen to all the previous shows with Morley and Yellow. Your new listeners will understand the iron issue. Okay.
I think the only thing I would add is just to reinforce some of our discussion, particularly last week. I want the listeners to really understand that the body has pairs of nutrients. There's always balance beams in the body. And we were talking about vitamin D. I think Melody had several questions. I want the listeners to understand that vitamin A and vitamin D are pairs. They need to be in relationship to each other. And that the body's need for vitamin A, despite the mind-numbing rhetoric on the internet, needs to be much higher in a healthy body than the vitamin D. When you go into the literature from the 1920s and 1930s, they were not even isolating vitamin D from the studies that they were doing because it was so insignificant at a metabolic level. The focus all was, back in the 20s and 30s, was all about retinol because they knew how supreme its impact was. A lot of that understanding has been lost over the ages because of the shift in focus. So, we just need to be sensitive to the need for pairs. There's a relationship between magnesium and calcium. There's a relationship between copper and iron. There's a relationship between A and D, sodium and potassium. The body's always in this dance between these nutrients, and we just need to really be mindful that no nutrient in isolation is going to solve the situation. It's of understanding the relationships between them and amongst themselves, it's so important.
And that's why going to a whole food source is so important, too, because Right, like cod, exactly. Cod liver oil's got 10 to 1 A to D, 10 times more A than D, and that's what you need, that's what you want. So a whole food-based source, you're going to go right every time. All righty, we're out of time. Thank you, Morley, for the Q&A session today. I think that helps the listeners to wrap their head around all this stuff a little better. So appreciate your time.
Always a pleasure. Yep,
and your expertise. We'll have you back another day.
Okay, very good. You guys have a great day.
You too.
Thank you so much, Morley Robbins. Again, you've been listening to You're the Cure right here on AM 580, brought to you by Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com. Till next Monday, Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, Melody Wilkes, Health Coach, you both have a wonderful rest of the week. We'll see you back here next Monday on You're the Cure.